And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton on the FM dial and the rest of the world streaming live at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. And as we said before the break, today we're going to be bringing you the scoop. We have something very interesting and exciting, and that is an interview about an article that's been making the rounds on the internet very quickly. We're going to be speaking with Drew Oya-Jay. He is an editor with the Media Co-op. You can find it at mediacoop.ca or look up local media co-ops like the Toronto Media Co-op. Lots of great articles on there. Drew recently, just yesterday, I believe, or this at the beginning of this week, wrote an article entitled "Canadian Voters May Only Support Destruction of Palestinian Villages. Four National Parties Now Endorse Dispossession in the Negev." And I believe we have Drew on the line now. Drew, do we have you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, excellent. Thanks for making the time to do this. It's very impromptu. We just started a program hiatus, but I happen to be transiting through the GTA, and I know everyone's talking about this article. It's amazing, and it speaks to a lot of concerns that everyone seems to have at the moment. I guess you started by looking at some recent comments by Elizabeth May. I'm just wondering if you could walk us through the main points of what it was that she said.
Well, I mean, I think that the background is that Elizabeth May, the leader of the Green Party, agreed to speak at an event about human rights organized by Canadians for Peace and Justice in the Middle East. Then I think the background seems to be that she came under quite a bit of fire from groups like the T'nai B'rith, sort of very staunchly pro-Israel groups, shall we say, basically for even daring to affiliate or show up at an event organized by CPGME. And so she then gave an interview basically saying that she wasn't going to pander to the pro-Palestinian folks and that she was definitely pro-Israel. And then this sort of became a ping-pong ball back and forth, but what came out was that the Jewish Tribune, which is a B'nai B'rith-run newspaper, released the full transcript of what she had told them, which was she had made some, like, extremely sort of, yeah, quite sort of surprisingly pro, taken some pretty pro stances in terms of specific Israeli policies, including the work of the Jewish National Fund, which is pretty widely known at this point to be an organization that is there to sort of solidify the facts on the ground in terms of destroying Palestinian villages, dispossessing Bedouin and moving them, you know, destroying their villages and then covering them up with these sort of forests and greenwashing them with these sort of sustainability initiatives.
Yes, these settlement practices are covered in your article. And I think what you've said there is the sense that I'm getting. Elizabeth May, in this case, seemed to have been going back and forth on the issue of whether she had called the Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East anti-Israel. So it was, you know, it was back and forth on whether she had said that, couldn't quite make up her mind. And it looked bad, unfortunately, you know, because for a time there, it looked like there might have been a politician, you know, part of a party that can be elected that is willing to say something about the occupation, about the settlements, to interact with Palestine solidarity organizations that represent a majority of world opinion. And it looked like that. And now, I mean, I don't know if that's the case, right?
Well, what's interesting about this is that, you know, unlike people like someone like Justin Trudeau, who you can say, I mean, you can say with some conviction that he's a bit of an airhead. He doesn't have a kind of, you know, he has a superficial grasp of policy and of matters. Elizabeth May is not that way. It's anybody who knows her knows that she's highly intelligent, has a mind like a steel trap in the sense that she knows, she has sort of an encyclopedic memory. She has a really, really sharp mind for policy. So she is, I would have to imagine, quite familiar with the situation. But what it looks like to me is that she, sort of, you know, in being the sort of principled progressive politician that she was, accepted to do a speaking engagement with CPGME, and then sort of realized through the full wrath of the pro-Israel establishment means to a politician, and at some point got cold feet. And decided that it was better to pander to that but didn't go all the way. So what's hilarious about this, or what's sort of tragic, depending on how you look at it, is that she's actually getting pretty roundly criticized by the pro-Israeli establishment within Canada, and just sort of, you know, discarded as you know, not being resolute enough in her support of Israel. At the same time, as she's obviously lost the support now of people who are pro-Palestinian. So she's really sort of almost, you know, fallen through the cracks by virtue of her sort of half measures to try to do damage control on both fronts.
Yeah, I mean, if you're sitting on the fence, that has consequences. It's not always the best idea politically. And I have to agree with your use of the word tragic, because Elizabeth May has taken principled positions. I know the Green Party in the past has been better than some other parties on the issue of Haiti and Canada's role there. And more recently with the case of Libya, I understand May and the Greens made some statements or questions that set them apart in looking at what exactly was going on. So these are people that are capable of giving an alternate voice in our elected parliament that represents a lot of our citizenry. But now, you know, when you go back and forth on the issue of Israel, Palestine, it presents a big problem. And as you say, you know, you have to try to be moderate and work with the side of the establishment. If you're trying to do that, then you're going to run into problems, because they're all or nothing. And in the case of Elizabeth May, she knows about the environment very much, and they understand what kind of actors in Canada are intent on destruction of the environment or overmining, over resource exploitation. And it's often the same group of people that are supporting militarism abroad.
Yeah, I mean, I think Elizabeth May, you know, because we know that she is to a pretty significant extent. I mean, she's got a long track record as somebody who's consistently principled, who speaks her mind. Who, you know, whether you agree with or not, like, you know, makes a point of having an informed, you know, principled opinion about a wide variety of things. I don't think it's a moral failing of Elizabeth May. I think it really illustrates the sort of disciplining effect that the system has on any politician that's elected, even one, with as much leeway, you know. Elizabeth May has probably more leeway than any other politician, being, you know, the only MP for her party and also the leader of her party. I think she has more latitude than basically any other MP in Parliament to speak her mind. But even someone, you know, as intelligent and usually principled as May can get sort of worn down by this, what I call in the article, the sort of the lathe of the establishment, and how it is constantly making your life really difficult if you don't sort of match up. So this is a sort of a decisive moment, I think, for May, because it really shows that she's sort of finally sort of starting to buckle a little bit from probably what is, I would imagine, behind the scenes has been a sort of, you know, 7 years of relentless pressure to conform from the folks that she's around, from the social circles in Ottawa, from all these powerful people who can make her life difficult constantly. I think it's hard to maintain that in Parliament. And I think what that means for people, you know, who are voters and who are trying to make a positive change, unfortunately, it means that we can't stop paying attention to the establishment and the disciplining effect it has. We have to tackle that head on, and we have to make that power structure visible so that we can oppose it and replace it.
Exactly. And I think I understand precisely what kind of pressure you're referring to. There's a lot of lobbying, phone calling, campaigning, behind the scenes things that can make it difficult for people who speak out on some of these issues. So if you're going to take a stand on that, you have to be prepared to stay and back yourself and be clear about your views. And that's where you run into problems after these years and years of relentless lobbying. And on the subject of the establishment, there's a related issue that you bring up in the article. And of course, this is something I've been meaning to comment on myself, but I'm so glad you did so in a much more eloquent way. And that is Stephen Harper's recent antics. Essentially, it's my understanding now he's going to have a bird sanctuary named after him. So Harper, he was at some kind of event. He was singing and everything. What happened there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, if you watch the actual performance, it's agonizing. It's absolutely agonizing to watch, and it's really awkward. And Stephen Harper's not a charismatic or personable guy. He's obviously a highly intelligent and very skilled politician in many ways, but you know, stage presence isn't his forte. So, I mean, there are different ways to interpret it. You know, he could see it as sort of him having fun, but I saw it more as him sort of, abasing himself in front of the establishment to really make it clear, to make his allegiances even more clear by sort of, you know, humiliating himself a little bit in front of this crowd. And as the media reports said, the crowd loved it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about people who were able to pay $100,000 literally for a table for a one-night fundraiser. This isn't the sort of a representative cross-section of the Jewish community. This is the captains of industry who are supporting Israel for completely other reasons than any sort of, affinity with the people who actually live in that country.
Right. I mean, less so than ideological reasons. You're looking at the money and the desire for a share of profits. And this is what you say links the whole thing. It links Harper's behavior. It links the pressure that's being put on May. And that is the desire to chase certain forms of money. And in this case, you look at basically U.S. Militarism abroad and the way that Canada has integrated itself. So, I mean, there's a lot of money. If you're on top of this, you can bring in a lot of profit.
Definitely. I mean, in Harper's particular case, I think you can go a little further and say that there's a pretty strong possibility that there's some kind of freaky Christian Zionist kind of ideas about bringing on the apocalypse by supporting Israel that might be behind it. But in terms of the ruling class and why they support Israel, I think it's pretty clear that it, you know, has nothing to do with a love or a solidarity with the Jewish people. It has nothing to do even with the people who live in Israel, it definitely doesn't have anything to do with democracy, because we would see that come out in a more principled way. I think what I say in the articles, what it has to do with is maintaining the slice, of the U.S. defense industry, the military and industrial complex that comes Canada's way. And as I say in the article, Canada's arms exports have doubled since 2001, since 9/11, basically. So we're looking at one of the fastest growing industries in Canada, and a source of billions of dollars in profits, you know, to shareholders and to Canadian investors and the people who own and run these companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to look at that as the sort of motivating factor when it comes to the decision to stand, as they put it, stand by Israel so vociferously and to not tolerate, to really not brook any compromise when it comes to fully denying the crimes of the Israeli state and their really damaging policies, and instead to just give them our full support all the time.
yeah.
I think that's in terms of that being acceptable to the ruling class at large, I think that's where that comes from.
Yeah, as you've pointed out, I mean, we have politicians saying that they're going to stand by Israel, right or wrong, which is funny because, I mean, we have politicians mostly that would not stand by our own government, right or wrong, only in certain circumstances. But somehow it's acceptable to stand by Israel in all circumstances. And this war drive in the Middle East, you know, it's related to the pursuit of profit, as you point out, and it combines that with some unusual political ideologies. And we saw, for example, in the case of President George W. Bush, there had been this recent news stories about his own unusual views and approaches to people in the Middle East, Jewish community, and so forth. I mean, there's some unusual agendas here. And as far as the conservative military spending program goes, there's been widely reported the massive at least plans or proposals for shipbuilding in addition to their intervention all over the place, in addition to flying troops and other things all over the world. I mean, they've got big plans and big mandates. And this is the kind of thing you learn about in the alternative media and independent media. And I know that Media Co-op has been covering actually Canadian militarism and some of these industry connections quite widely. Is there anything you'd recommend in terms of people looking at in terms of past articles or congregations of articles such as on the Toronto Co-op site or Media Co-op's dot anywhere? Is there a particular avenue you'd want to direct people to?
Nothing comes to mind at the moment. I think we have pretty consistent, good coverage. I mean, if you're looking for anyone's topic, you can search those sites and you can find it. I think there's a real treasure trove of coverage, because we've had so much coverage coming through the sites, for the past, since 2008, and we've been publishing the Dominion since 2003. So, there's 10 years of material there that's useful. We did publish a special issue on foreign policy. I believe it was in 2006, which I think really summed up a lot of different aspects of Canadian foreign policy and sort of painted a larger picture. I think it's a constant effort that we put in to sort of get a more profound understanding of the, the reasons these things are happening, because all you hear in the corporate press is sort of the day-to-day, nitty-gritty of these little scandals and stuff, but they're not, they generally don't examine the larger motives and the sort of structural limitations that are there for, for politicians and also for the people among the ruling class.
Well, we know who's connecting the dots, and you have solid analysis there. It is a treasure trove. People can search the Dominion, they can search the media co-ops, and if you do search, you will find out about Canadian militarism in various countries and in various different respects, and I know that will be the case. So thanks very much, Drew. I'm glad your article has caught so much attention and must have really struck a nerve. So congratulations once again, and I look forward to seeing what else you and the Dominion and the media co-ops are able to put out on these issues. So thanks so much. I'm glad we caught you so quickly, and thanks for being available today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care.
That was Drew Oyajay, and he has been editing and helping out organize, found, create, and bring together authors and materials for The Dominion, which I believe is at dominionpaper.ca. If you Google Dominion Paper, you'll find it. And also the media co-ops, there's www.mediacoop.ca, which is where his recent article was published, entitled Canadian Voters May Only Support Destruction of Palestinian Villages. Four national parties now endorse dispossession in the Negev.